know that there has had to have been some sacrifice, whether it's time or nutrition or whatever it is.
I'm recording myself talking about having a relationship with my chest.
I'm Ben Cunning.
I'm Dave Kennedy.
And this is Hacking Health Podcast. Yo, welcome back, Ben and Dave, in the hot seat, episode 142, We Hack Health Podcast. What is up, dude?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hacking Your Health Podcast this week. I'm really excited because I got nothing for this podcast. Ben says he has the whole thing planned. I literally have been traveling like crazy, so I was like looking up things of like what we could talk about today, and thank God Ben has something because normally it's me that comes up with the topics a lot of times. Not always. It's like 50-50. And you're definitely pulling the 55% this time around because I got nothing. But I also, if you're watching the YouTube video, I changed my video setup just slightly to where it doesn't make me look like this massive human being, which is probably the exact opposite of what we want. But yeah, you got to move it down a little bit. I just moved this thing down. But you can play with the video a little bit and where the tilt's at, so you can have it like angled downward. And it makes you look obviously much larger with like a V taper. And I was doing some videos for when we'd won the Forrester Wave. And so I was trying to get a little bit more proper with it and actually like the configuration. It doesn't make me look as big, but it makes me look like I'm actually like looking right at you when I'm, you know, not.
I've just actually changed mine. I think this is a better height for both of us together. Like, I feel like this is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know if you can hear me properly because the mic's down here, but whatever.
You sound good. No, you sound great. Yeah.
Cool. So what's going on, dude?
Oh, geez. So a crazy busy weekend. You know, it was obviously Mother's Day. It's funny because there was like this long running joke for Father's Day. We'd always go over to Aaron's side of the family and spend like 8 hours over their house celebrating Father's Day, which, you know, for me, that's not how I would like to spend my Father's Day. You know, like for me, it's like, hey, can I get a day where I have no kids?
Yeah, and
I
can free pass to go do whatever shit you want.
Like 8 hours in the gym to do whatever I want. Like I'm doing legs for 8 hours. That's it. It's going to be a deadlift an hour. You know, it's like that's my idea of a Father's Day thing.
One set of deadlifts and then 59-minute rest period.
It's going to be a whole day, just all day long. Like, are you still in the gym? Yes, it's only been 7.5 hours. I got 10 more to go. But literally got like, you know, like some food down there, some you know, like protein, and just hang out down there for the whole day.
The DoorDash guy being like, can you bring it? I'm in the gym.
Yeah, in the gym. I'm not leaving. I can't leave the gym. It's a 10-hour gym fest. But
it's like, you know, the Rich Piana meme when he was like, yeah, it's an 8-hour arm workout, and he starts going through it.
but it was good for Mother's Day. You know, I took Gavin driving for like 3.5 hours, went and saw my mom. My stepmom was sick, so I couldn't go over and see her. She's got a little bit of a bug. But then we did a whole bunch of stuff with Aaron, and I, you know, made it her day that she wanted to. And then we went to a nice steak place afterwards, all, you know, just as a family, the five of us, and did like a nice thing. And then did airsoft this weekend. And of course, you know, because like we don't not do airsoft. But I was popping off this weekend. It was one of probably my best weekends that I've ever had. We have these little grenades, and they're in airsoft. You know, you obviously get hit with the pellet, you're out. It's an honor system. You know, sometimes you get cheaters where they won't do it or whatever. But you also have these grenades, and I got these crazy grenades from the UK. Actually, they don't make them here. I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to use them here. But it's okay. Like, customs doesn't stop them. So, but they use 209 shotgun primers. So shotgun primer being, you know, like the initial like flint and the, you know, initial, you know, powder and explosion that kind of kicks the bullet off and everything. Right. So the 209 shotgun primers you put into these like little tube, and you throw it in it. It's like a shotgun going off. It sounds like a shotgun going off. Okay. And, the rule is if you're in 10 feet in invisible range, you're dead with these guns. Well, we're playing this game called Cemetery Win, which is like we have to get these like two bins to the cemetery and then in and to win the game, and everybody else has to defend against it. And I got a video, I got to post it. It's great. I literally the you know, they go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and I sprint my ass off as fast as I can go right to the cemetery because I know they're all going to be there. And I throw one grenade in, I kill like 8 guys. I throw another grenade in, kills the other 8 guys. Everybody's dead. Their whole team is dead. We win the game. Like, everybody's dead with the 2 grenades of the game and just started. It was the most amazing thing I've ever done in my life. I was like, and the ref's like, oh my God, I just witnessed something miracle. You know, like, Everybody's dead. So it was a good weekend. Had a good time with my kids. My son's doing really good at driving. He was on the freeway pretty much the entire time. So he's doing great. But other than that, man, it's been good. How's everything been with you? I saw you were hanging out with Harper quite a bit.
Hanging out with
Harper?
Yeah. We had a pretty chill weekend. She wanted to bake cookies. Now, she was obsessed with wanting to bake cookies, so there was absolutely zero way around it.
You were definitely baking cookies.
Oh, absolutely baking cookies. Yeah. But she also had Joe Bear home from school. So Joe Bear is like, you only get this if you're really good. And it's like a teddy bear that comes with different outfits, but it also comes with like a book of all the photos and everything that it's done with everybody else from the class that's done. So there's definitely like a little bit of one-upmanship of like, well, looks like Joe Bear had a shit time over at Ava's house. So it's like, we just see the time that he's going to have at our house. So we had Joe Bear for the weekend and we went down to Trish's barbecue. It was sunny here, so it was the first barbecue of the year. Which was good. We did Saturday and Sunday barbecue, and Carver was like, but we've done barbecue. I was like, it's summer now, like it's sunny. This is literally barbecue. What our weekends.
Yeah.
No better way to cook or eat food, I'll say that much. But no, really, really solid weekend. Final weekend before some travel, so just wanted to sort of chill out and hang out a little bit. But I got into a bit of a heated discussion with Trish, and this is one of the topics that I want to talk about today.
Coming to Ohio? Moving to Ohio?
No. And I have to be very careful in the way that I word this because of how the conversation was ended yesterday. But I think it's relevant, and I'm not in any way saying anything negative about Trish in any way. I'll say this before I start. My mom has always been supportive of me in everything that I've done, whether it was going out 5 nights a week and drinking Hennessy and whatever I wanted to get up to. My mom was always supportive of it. She is still supportive. She is still that supportive. So I went to meet her for a coffee on Friday. So I got there. She was there and Grace was there. And Grace's grandmother was there, Valerie. And I sat down. I was late. They'd already ordered. And mom was like, oh, I ordered you Americano, but I didn't get you a bun. I was like, what? So you ordered yourself a croissant or something? I was like, why not? She was like, oh, because I thought you were being good. Now, I know exactly my mom's thought process, okay? She is there to support me. She doesn't want to put the temptation in front of me. She sees that I'm doing this mini cut and wants to be supportive of the process. So I appreciate that. But I think that it's an important topic to talk about because I think there is a narrative with people who are on a weight loss journey or a diet or a fat loss journey or whatever, that they think that they can't have the things that yes. they want to enjoy. I'm not saying that that's my mom, but I do think that there is an important message within this. It's not anything against Trish. I have to reiterate that because I know she's going to listen to this tomorrow morning and then send me a voice note or phone me instantly. So I'm not saying anything negative against her, but I do think it's important to talk about how whenever you're on any sort of fat loss journey or diet or cut, that you can still incorporate the things that you enjoy and love.
Well, and I think what people really run into is fat loss is extremely complex, right? Because there's so many different ways to do it. And, you know, at the end of the day, we try to simplify it by talking about it, calories in versus calories out. And there's literally data studies upon data studies upon data studies. There's actually a person that ate literally, you know, chocolate candy, you know, within a caloric deficit and lost weight, right? You know, there's so many different ways to look at this and how somebody could either lose weight or progressively get to a point to where they have a desirable figure that has enough fat loss where they can show through it based on muscles and things like that. And I think the big misconception is that, you know, in order to, you know, be this, I mean, to have an amazing physique or to get the desired results, you have to do 100% like clean eating, you know, chicken, rice, broccoli every single day. You can't, you know, indulge in anything like pizza or, you know, cookies or donuts or whatever, donuts for you specifically. You'd be out of this whole thing if you could do donuts.
Yes.
So, you know, it's there's so many different ways to skin this cat where, you know, you have to look at one, having a really solid and base understanding around how your body works. And I think once you have that foundation, you can kind of figure out different ways of doing things. Like, you know, right now we're in a surplus for calories for myself, right? You're in a deficit, I'm in a surplus. And it's funny because, you know, I'm eating extremely healthy right now and people will come to me and be like, hey, oh, you must be on a, you know, a deficit or you must be cutting. And I'm like, actually, no, I'm on a surplus. I just happen to be like really focused and dialed in of what I'm doing right now because it's important because I fucked up last time. So, you know,
I've learned from my previous experience not to do
not to do it this way. But at the same time, you know, you flash back 3 years ago when I first started working with you, 3.5 years ago when I first started working with you. You know, I was eating very, very healthy, at least, you know, in retrospect, but my caloric, my calories were way above what I was burning on a daily basis. So I was gaining weight. And I thought I was doing everything right. And I just thought because I'm eating healthy, magically the weight's going to start to fall off and I'm going to the gym. I have no idea what I'm doing here at the gym, you know, but I'm sure it's going to work. And, you know, it's like anything that you do in life. Like when you first get your cell phone, it's the first, let's just say you go from iOS, an iPhone, and you're like, man, I'm switching to Android. Do you think you know everything about that phone that is possible when you first pick it up?
I don't. My brother has an Android phone and he hands me it sometimes. I'm like, I don't know how to get into it. I don't even know anything about it.
Absolutely no idea. You've never done it before, right? You've never used that phone before. So if you don't use something and you don't understand how things work, you're not going to be able to be either an expert in that, or even not be an expert, but understand how to functionally use that device for what it's supposed to be doing. And it's the same thing we're doing with our bodies, right? We don't understand what our desires are. I guess maybe we know what our goals are, but we don't know how to get to those goals without understanding how our bodies actually work and how it operates. Once we understand that, there's so many different ways to do this, whether that's a keto diet or whatever. You can do whatever the hell you want to if it works for you. But at the end of the day, you really have to understand, like, it really is just calories in versus calories out. So for you, that's on a deficit or cutting. You can eat whatever the hell you want to, as long as it's within the confines of what you're doing. Or you might be banking calories for the entire week, you know, where you're saving calories and you're going to have a day where you go out and you binge. It happens, right? And you're still staying within the confines of the system that you put yourself into. And that's what I think people really need to understand, is that it's not about what you eat. It's how much you eat and the things that surround it, around the knowledge you have of what you can get away with and what you can't, to get to those desired results or outcomes.
Agree, but I will say this, and it was Helmy initially that I heard this from. Now, he will say that he took it from someone else, but I can only give him the credit because he's the person that I saw or that I heard it from. Calories will dictate your weight specifically. So if you eat more calories than you burn, you will put on weight. If you eat less than you burn, you will lose weight. So calories dictate weight. Macros will dictate your body composition. So like you said, if I eat 1900 calories worth of donuts, I'm probably not going to have the best body composition versus if I ate 1900 calories of whole foods, nutrient dense foods, and things that are actually good and nutrient dense for my body. I'm going to be in a much better position eating that type of food. And I'll actually tag onto this because I did see it. I talked about this 2 weeks ago on the group call, and then obviously the fucking algorithm heard me and I saw it was a podcast interview. I don't know who it was, but they basically went a step further. And he talked about micronutrients will dictate how you feel. So calories will dictate your weight. Macronutrients will dictate how you look. And micronutrients will dictate how you feel. But to take it back to what Trish was saying.
Good statement.
It makes total sense. Like, you can lose weight, but we're focused on fat loss. And I don't want to get into the weight versus fat loss. But like, if I cut my arm off right now, I'm going to be lighter. I'm not really going to like how I look. I would rather lose it from body fat. To take it back to what Trish was saying. And This is me knowing myself within the sort of confines of what I know works for me. So I've set myself a target of 1900 calories. I know that I could probably eat 2100 calories and I could probably still be in a fat loss phase, but I like to do it quick. I like to do it as severe as possible. If I had had a croissant or insert whatever bun on Friday morning, it probably wouldn't have had any impact whatsoever because I might have been slightly higher and there's my calories, or else I would have adjusted myself the rest of the day. Now, I will say the croissants that come out were not delicious. So Trish did do me a favor on that because it wouldn't have been worth it in terms of the calories. And if I had had one sat in front of me, I would have had it either way. So she did do me a favor in that sense. But I think if you think about it, that calories will determine your weight. Macros will determine how your body composition is, and micros will determine how you feel, is the best approach that you can have and look at this. And I will always, always, always say, keep something in that will keep you seeing. So whether your thing is pizza, or even if it's a fucking margarita, or even if it's like donuts, ice cream, whatever the thing is, keep it in, because that's the thing that will allow you to do this for 10 weeks, for 20 weeks, for 30 weeks, if you need to. Whereas if I tell you, you can't have this thing, it's the only thing you're going to be thinking about because of where the way that we're wired psychologically.
Yeah, and just to break down things for folks that might just be tuning in that may not know of this, macronutrients being carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, micronutrients being the actual nutrient profile breakdowns of those macronutrients. So, you know, think of it as like, you know, the things that keep your body, nutrients, you know, vitamins, minerals, everything else that keeps your body. And there's a great book called Own the Day by Marcus Rain. Aubrey Marcus. There we go. I almost said Marcus Rainham, who, you know, is the guy that built the first firewall in security.
That's not his book.
No. Aubrey Marcus, who talked about, you know, going to, you know, a Home Depot and, you know, are you, you know, rebuilding your house with the shittiest parts that are out there, or are you rebuilding your house with things that are quality, allows your, you know, the house foundation not to sink and, you know, for the whole house not to actually crumble. And that's gonna be kind of the micronutrients part. So, you know, he used this, the statement, you are what you eat. So you have to think about that of what does that look like from a breakdown of chemicals and everything else that you're doing. In fact, there was just a study that came out on Fairlife, which I'm devastated on.
I know, touchy subject.
I need to do more analysis on that. And I also reached out to Dr. Lane Norton to see if you would do a video on it, just to kind of like maybe put me to ease a little bit. But the amount of plastics that are in Fairlife bottles is like astronomical. So floating plastics, which are, you know, very good, wreak havoc on your, you know, endocrine system, testosterone levels, things like that. I mean, that's in, by the way, that's in everything that we
eat. Funny, we knew a couple of guys that were starting a supplements company that could make a better version of Fairlife.
That's pretty tough to do, man. That's the ultra filter stuff they do is pretty impressive, but we can definitely, I think, eventually get there. So we'll try. But
so yes, Trish, if you're listening, mom, I love you. I appreciate the support you've given my entire life. I'm not saying anything negative towards you. I just think it was a valid point to bring up. So please, once you've listened to this, phone me and tell me I did a good job.
You're sweating here right now.
No, honestly. So I joked about it all weekend, and then yesterday we were in the kitchen and I was winding up. I was like, I can't have this because I'm being good. And I did get a little bit touchy, and Grace was like winding her up a little bit more. And I could tell she was getting frustrated, but I need to reiterate the fact I'm not saying anything negative about what she said. I just think it's a valid point to bring up in terms of like, you can still incorporate these things, whether it is an extreme fat loss phase you're doing or an aggressive cut as I'm doing, whatever it is, you can still incorporate these things because like fucking life's too short. Like if you need to have if you need to have something that's 300 or 400 calories to keep you sort of on it longer term, absolutely fine. Plus, I mean, if fucking Harper was making cookies, I had to eat a cookie. Like I could be like, no, to a 4-year-old, I can't eat this because like that's another shit show that I do not want to deal with.
Well, it's interesting too, because my son Mason has been, and thank you by the way, been doing the lifting program that you put out for him. Mm-hmm. And he's been tracking his calories via MyFitnessPal. So he's been doing
all this. He must be almost as strong as you by now. It's been 4 or 5 weeks.
pretty close. 4 or 5 weeks in pretty much. But he's enjoying it, and you know, he's tracking his calories. And I think it was like an eye opener for him of how much calories he was actually consuming versus what he should be actually eating. Mm-hmm. And you know, I would say, like, you know, when Mason was a little bit younger, and he hadn't hit his growth spurt or puberty or anything like that, he was, you know, a little bit short and stocky and had a little bit of, you know, excess, you know, fat in his stomach. And he's really leaned out as he's gotten taller. He's thin. He looks really good. Now he's just trying to put on muscle mass, and he's trying to figure out the best ways of doing it. And you know, he said something to me. That I thought was funny, and it was like sacrilege in my mind, which was, he's like, well, I'm just going to stay in a deficit and I'm just going to lose all this fat, and I know I'm going to lose muscle, but I can eventually build that muscle back. And I'm like, no. We don't talk about losing muscle in this family. All right. Like that is sacrilege here. We absolutely are focused on always building muscle mass in this family. He's like, okay, Dad,
so what we're going to do is we're going to get Mason on the podcast so that we can set him down and we can set him straight as to look, we do whatever we can to maintain as much muscle mass as possible. No matter what type of phase you're in, that's the goal. Maintain as much muscle mass as possible.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because, you know, the rationality to Mason is, well, you know, I'll just get lean. And this is what everybody thinks, you know, I'll just get lean and then I'll build muscle. And, It's the exact, it's the middle ground that you want to shoot for. It's,
yeah, you know, especially at his age, like, he should be just eating pounding more and muscle. Training more. Like he should be getting in as much as possible. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, I think people think about it as, well, I have to drop the fat first. And a friend of mine I was talking to said the same thing. He's like, man, I've really leaned out now and I feel amazing, but I don't have any muscle. And I'm like, yeah, that's how this works. You know, like
you left it all in the cardio bike.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I'm like, you know, you gotta focus now on building this muscle back up, and you know, you gotta start looking at different ways of kind of balancing that between, you know, fat gain and, you know, muscle loss and muscle wasting, muscle gaining. But again, it's all doable. You know, you just, one, you know, having a system to fall in line with, you know, hold yourself accountable. And you'd mentioned that the foods that keep you sane, you know, you always hear, you know, don't, you know, stay away from your trigger foods, stay away from your trigger foods. No, F that. Go eat your trigger foods as much as you want to, just do it within reason, right? You know, if your trigger food is pizza, don't eat 8 to 10 slices of pizza or a whole large pizza. Like first of all, you're gonna feel like total crap, which, you know, I had pizza, I think 2 weekends ago, and I definitely didn't feel good, but I only ate like 3 pieces. It was within my range, but I still felt like crap afterwards because I'm not used to eating crap like that, right? But at the same time, you know, trigger foods are things that you enjoy. Don't call them trigger foods, call them food that you enjoy to eat, and keep them in the confines of the calories that you do. And what we're talking about here is, listen, I'm a big advocate of tracking calories, but you don't necessarily have to always track calories your whole life as you go through this, okay? If you got a good understanding around, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get here, but if you have a good understanding around how much protein you need, you know, and how much calories you have, you can kind of wing and estimate it as you're going along. And you can eat less and more depending on what that is, but you want to make sure you're always getting your protein goals, number one, and then two, kind of filling in, you know, the carbs and fats as you go along with that, whatever works best for you. And it's those types of changes that, you know, the foundational piece is, like, once you get your eating down, I feel like anything else is completely possible to go and do, whether it's losing weight, gaining weight, you know, building muscle. You obviously have to be consistent at the gym, but, you know, getting all your food intake in is probably the most critical part of all of this.
Yeah. And I think I'm a big advocate of tracking your calories so you have an understanding of how food is made up, because I think that we're so far detached of how food's actually made up and what portion sizes are. Like, it's a good learning tool to understand
You have to track your calories for a few months to understand
I agree. What that looks
like, right? If you can't do it all the time, I prefer doing it all the time, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think my sort of tag along to that is, like, I'm quite confident that I could, in fact, I know because I have done it, that I can eat a certain way and maintain weight. And then I'll know, okay, right, well, I'm either losing weight or I'm gaining weight or losing fat or gaining fat, whatever way you want to phrase it. I should adjust this in whatever way that I'm trying to go. And I know how to do that, like, just from the foods that I eat. Like, I'm pretty habitual in terms of the foods that I eat. Now, obviously, if you're not that way or you travel quite a lot, it's a little bit more difficult than actually tracking so that you go, okay, right, well, this is how this food's made up, and I sort of see what my meals are making up throughout the day, then yes, tracking a little bit more. And I will say again, you know, you can get to the point where you have an understanding of what your body needs, you have an understanding of what your sort of daily and weekly output is, and you sort of know how to hit that in terms of calories. If you want to dial it in a little bit and you want to run a bit of a mini cut for years or strip off a little bit of body fat, like, all you need to do is then get back on MyFitnessPal and track it to make sure you're as close as you thought it was. It doesn't need to be an all the time thing, but it definitely needs to be a sometimes thing.
Yeah, because I mean, you go out of range, and like, when we're doing these types of plannings that we do, you know, either, you know, maintenance, deficit, or surplus, we need to know where we're at calorie wise at certain times, you know, and you can use weight as a good barometer of that too. You know, if your weight is constantly fluxing upward, then obviously you need to cut less on that, you know, what you're eating, if you're trying to lose. And if you're going down too fast or too far, you know, you got to kind of balance that out. So, you know, you can play it day by day, but it's really difficult to do that because a lot of times, you know, food's built up in your GI tract, you know, you might have a lot of water weight, you know, for whatever reason, might be, you know, inflamed. There's a lot of different reasons that weight can fluctuate. Stress can also be an indicator of that too. So, you know, you need to take a look at something more consistent. And the best way we know about doing that, and by the way, there's not a person in this world that calculates calories perfect. It's not possible. It's not possible.
Like, and I would even say, like, I have been tracking calories on and off for 10 years, and like, I feel like I have a pretty good understanding, and I will go through times where I'll just eyeball it. But whenever you actually set something on the scale and you weigh out how much it is, it's a fucking eye opener, no matter how many times you've done it, how long you've done it. It's like, oh shit, right, okay, I've maybe been a little bit off here for a couple of weeks.
Even if you go out and eat something, or, you know, like, the calories and ingredients might be different, and there's variations. Like, I think, what is it, like 200 to 400 calorie potential variation, you know,
and my MyFitnessPal allow, just say I'm a restaurant and I'm submitting my calories to MyFitnessPal, they allow a 20% variation, which is huge in itself. Huge.
So you're never going to be exact. And that's why people like, you know, I always get the question of like, well, if I'm going out here and I do this, like, how do I know it's, I'm like, it's not going to be, but you're going to be close enough. And by the way, are you exact on how many calories you burn every day? No. You know, did you have more steps? Did you sit more that day? Were you more active in hammering something or fixing something? You know, your calories are going to be fluctuating up and down as well. So there's not a perfect science to this to say this is going to be 100% accurate. But what we do know is that if you're in a slight surplus or a slight deficit, it has the most amount of benefits. So it's this very slow pendulum, very small pendulum swing each way that gives you the most desired benefits. What we see from the studies is that a slight deficit will help maintain muscle mass, lose the least amount of it, and the possibility of actually growing muscle mass still in deficit. And have the fat burning effects, especially if you're insulating that with enough amino acids or protein. And then same thing for the surplus. If we're in a slight surplus, it's been shown that if you're just in a slight surplus, maintenance to slight surplus are the most ideal conditions for gaining muscle mass, right? And there was very little, if any, huge impact on muscle gaining in a large surplus. So the ones that are doing those massive bulks, you're just adding a ton of body fat on when you don't necessarily need to. Now, if you're, you know, obviously a competitive trainer and you need those calories just for the energy levels and everything else, that's a different story. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a very small pendulum swing back and forth. Now, what changes, though, is as your weight influxes up or down, does the calories as well. So if there's less of you, so let's just say, you know, you're at 2,000 calories and you drop 10 pounds. Well, now you're 10 pounds less, which means you're burning less calories moving around, which means you probably have either A, less fat or less muscle, depending on how you're doing it. You need less calories to actually operate by. So your calories have to dip based on the weight itself. Same thing for surplus. You know, as I start to gain, you know, right now I'm sitting at 240. As I sit at 240, you know, I need less calories I need more calories than I did when I was at 220 because I have more things I'm moving around, whether that's muscle or fat or whatever. I have to move around more, and that's more energy that I expend, with my body. It's the same thing if you build muscle mass. The more muscle mass you have, the more calories you burn, because the more mass you have across your body. Mass doesn't matter in the sense of fat, muscle, whatever. Now, per pound of each, muscle burns more calories than fat. However, you know, again, it's mass that your body has to move around and go and adjust and use. So, you know, these things aren't extremes. And that's why when you look at, you know, the comment earlier around you need to be good in what you eat. Well, we're really just doing these small scales up and down to try to really balance our bodies in a way that we want to get the desired results. Now, you are going a little bit more in that pendulum because you know you can handle that, and you like to get down to the results faster and not have to deal with a, you know, huge, you know, a massive cut for 6 months, right? So you're moving that pendulum much quicker because you're more seasoned and more talented and more of an expert in this area than not. So, you know, but again, these things are just small movements back and forth to get those results that you need.
Yeah, and I'll wrap it up on this. I definitely overconsumed on calories yesterday. Again, I was at Trisha's for a barbecue and there was plenty of food. And yes, was I heavier this morning? Absolutely. No, did I lose my shit whenever I stepped on the scales? Absolutely not, because I have an understanding that I'm going to be heavier because there is literally just more food in my system. Did I utilize those additional calories and food in my training session today? Absolutely fuck yes, I did. I had an awesome session and I felt great afterwards. So I'll quote Adam on this one. You cannot out train a bad diet, but you can fuel a good workout. So okay, yes, I've been pretty much accurately on it up until yesterday. Did I overconsume? Probably about 200 or 300. Fine. Like, I'm still okay. I'll probably be lighter again tomorrow as part of the process. So the topic that I actually came with. No. I'm in charge today.
Real quick, I have to tell you a funny story really quick. So you're talking about the calories and whatever. Chris, my buddy of mine, you know, that you know obviously. He was listening to the podcast the other day. It was actually yesterday. And he's like, oh my God, I'm so pumped. He's like, that's a great idea on the Gushers. So he literally leaves his house and drives to the store to go get Gushers. Because he's like, this is going to change like everything, you know? And it did for me. It's like, great. And then he realized that there's palm seed oil in it. And he's going oil free, like in ingredients. So he's like, he was like the most bummed dude ever because he couldn't eat
in
Gushers
the store
before.
With him in his hand.
He's got the Gushers in the store and he's texting me. He's like, no, it has palm seed oil in it. I can't do this. So first of all, respect for holding true to what you're trying to do from an oil perspective, Chris. But second, I'm sorry to let you down there on the palm seed oils.
fair. Cool. Yeah. Right. Today, I want to talk about other ways to progress in the gym that's not necessarily related to weight resistance. We talk about progressive overload.
Whoa.
Sorry. What I'm saying is other ways to progress in the gym that's not solely related to adding more weight to the bar. Yes, we're still weight and resistance training.
I was about to hop off the podcast.
Good. I'm glad you didn't.
Because I think he just sees you in the window. So hey, it's gonna be me talking about this topic here. So you know.
So yes, we're still talking about weight and resistance training, but obviously, whenever we talk about progressive overload, we talk about adding more weights or more reps. And I want to give a little bit more context to other ways that we can progress, because yes, they are absolutely two of the main ones, but they're not the only ones. Agree or disagree?
I agree. 100% agree.
Okay, cool. So I've broken it down into sections, and I'm just going to run through it. The first one is volume. And what I mean by volume is obviously more weight, more reps, more sets, or maintaining the strength that you have as you drop weight. So we think about, I'll use myself as an example. If I lift 100-pound dumbbells 2 weeks ago and today I'm 8 pounds lighter, technically pound for pound, I am stronger. So that to me is seen as a progression. So being able to maintain weight as your mass drops to me is a way to progress in the gym. So more weight, as we know, more reps, more sets, or maintaining the same level of strength as you drop weight. Whenever we talk about volume, we're talking about the total amount of weight lifted across the amount of sets that you do, across the amount of reps you do across the session. So actually more reps is going to be more volume if you're lifting the same weight. More sets is going to increase volume because you're physically doing more. And then, as I said, maintaining the same amount of weight as you drop body fat and pound for pound or more.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, what we're trying to always do is put our muscles in some sort of stress situation, right? Our body responds to stimulus in our muscles. And depending on the type of stimulus, and this is what I always just, you know, I think I've talked about this once or twice in the podcast before, but what I absolutely find fascinating about our bodies, like our bodies adjust to everything that we do. It morphs and changes to what we need it to be. So for example, if, you know, we're just, you know, a bunch of computer nerds sitting in front of the computer, we're not moving around. Well, you know, the energy and focus is going to be going into our mind and our brain because we're, constantly, you know, figuring out complex problems, dealing with, you know, heavy stressors in our heads, not necessarily physically. And you can see the folks, you know, that maybe don't necessarily spend a lot of time in their body, but they're absolutely freaking brilliant in their minds because that's the muscle that they use the most, right? So our bodies adapt to the things that we come. So if we're just sitting out there and we're not moving around, well, yes, our heart isn't going to get as much attention. Our muscles aren't going to get as much attention. We're not going to be pumping blood as much. Therefore, things start to break down a bit. Same thing for like runners. You look at you know, athletic runners, especially distance runners, going to be relatively lean, you know, profile, but man, they can run fast and long as they want to, right? You look at somebody that's, you know, cutting down trees all day long, you know, they're going to be these massive, big, bulky dudes because they have to have those muscles to do the jobs they're doing. So our entire system in our bodies are designed to morph into whatever we're doing on a regular basis. And that's the key, regular basis. So when we're stimulating muscles, there's, you know, we've talked about this before, but there's, you know, your fast twitch and short twitch fibers within our fast twitch and slow twitch fibers within our bodies, which, you know, have different purposes. One being explosive, powerful type of movement, others being more the endurance, longer term, you know, type ones. And the slow twitch fibers are the ones that, you know, are the ones that grow in size. Typically they need more size and volume. But anyways, it's one of those things where, you know, when we start to look, put those muscles under duress, we start to stimulate them in different ways. It could be, you know, the amount of volume. It could be the time under tension. It could be the amount of weight that we do.
Whoa. You're ahead. I have what? Many more in this list. Don't be like giving the next ones really away. I know you haven't seen the list yet, but like, let me give me through the process here.
Okay. Go for it. I'm in a rush.
The next one is tempo. So that's what we're going to talk about. So the next sort of title we'll say is efficiency. The first one on that is tempo. So essentially what we're talking about in tempo is the speed or the rate that you move the weight. So for whatever reason, it must be like ingrained in my head as a male, I always go to bench press. I don't even do bench press, but Bench press is the one that I go to, and I'm using an example. So for example, if I'm doing a bench press and I do 1 second down and 1 second up, it takes me 2 seconds to do a rep. Now, I would never program that. The way I would program it would be 3 seconds on the way down, 1 second pause at the bottom, 2 seconds on the way up, 1 second pause at the top. Literally three times the amount of time under tension. So three times the amount of work happening from this, the exact same like weight and like
just by set. Changing the timing.
Just by changing the timing. So that's another way that we can play about with progress. So whether I'm a big fan of like on a leg press, like doing a 2 second pause at the bottom, or on an RDL doing a 4 second eccentric movement. So like playing about with just the time, you're moving the same amount of weight, you're doing the same amount of reps, you're just spending a little bit more time doing that. Agree?
Yeah. No, 100% agree. And these timing intervals, also called tempo, are ways that you can really play with your workouts to get different results. And we know that, you know, based on a lot of the data studies, that there is your concentric motion and your eccentric motion. Concentric being the explosive, powerful upward movement typically, right? Eccentric being the, you know, method downward. So, you know, the resistance part of that. If you ever noticed, if you've ever tried to do, like, just say bicep curls, and you can't get your arms all the way up because they're so fatigued, and you rock your body up, you can definitely hold that eccentric portion the way down substantially longer, because that's how our muscles are designed. You know, they can handle a lot more load on the eccentric versus concentric. And what the studies have shown is that, again, more time under tension, but also the eccentric motion typically builds the most amount of muscle. So, you know, as we're playing with tempo, you know, we want to focus, you know, first on the concentric, which is going to be your fast twitch fibers, right? Those fast explosive ones, the strength. So going up fast movement. So, you know, 1 second up, you know, and then pause the top, you know, 3 seconds down as you're going down, focusing on the, you know, slow twitch fibers and that eccentric motion, you know, and when we're down, let's just say it's a bench press. What the studies also show too, is that in a stress position, when our muscles are in a stress position, causes the most amount of tension and strain on those muscles, thus building more muscle. So, you know, we want to be able to look at that and say, well, if we're paused at the bottom, whether it's a leg press, you know, a bench press, whatever, when we're in a stress position, that's the most ideal condition that we're under tension with that weight to be able to build muscle. So those three things combined together, we build a really amazing profile around explosive, powerful, strength-based training, eccentric endurance, muscle size training, and all around building of muscle in those stress positions. So it's the most ideal kind of circumstances when you can start to play with timing to really kind of build out how you're perfecting, you know, your muscle. So, you know, and again, it all depends on, you know, some people have like, you know, a 10 second tempo where they're going down 10 seconds, that which is brutal, right?
Brutal. Like Ali Gilbert, the girl that does the silverback coaching. Luke Lehman, her coach, is a friend of Matt's. He's an Australian guy. And I see on her Instagram, she has like 10 second eccentric squats. And I'm like, fuck, I'd be doing like just the bar. Crippled underneath the bar.
And then you have a couple second pause at the bottom as well. Yeah. And then it's brutal, especially on squats. Like, listen,
try
to be in like the 5 to 6, 7 rep range on squats, because I don't want to do 12 squats. Like, I just don't want to, when I'm counting like 10, I'm like, am I seriously done with this yet? Like, I've been squatting for like 7 years. What year is this right now? Like, so if I could stay within like the 5 to 6, 7 rep range area on squats, that's my ideal situation for me personally. I'm not doing 15 squats. I'm not doing 20. I'm not doing 10 second eccentric squats. No, like, that sounds horrible, you know? So,
yeah. And I would also, so just to like clarify that you can progress. So say you're stuck at a specific weight and you still want to progress, just add 1 second to the movement. So whether you do 3 seconds the way down, add it to 4, whether you get a pause at the bottom, add a second in, whatever it is. But genuinely count it, because what you think, and I do this all the time whenever I do form feedback videos, because I obviously know the tempo that I've programmed, and I know the way you count seconds in your head whenever you've got a bar on your back or in your hands, versus me sat at my computer being like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then you've done like 4 reps by the time I've got to the end of it. So we actually genuinely do to cut that. And I think that... It's the way that I have always trained. Like, I remember specifically, I've talked about M10 recently. That's how they taught us how to train. And the thing about it for me is, yes, okay, it sucks. Absolutely does. You maybe can't lift as much, but in terms of progress over time, you will make more progress because you're actually getting strong in the muscle and not just the movement. You're not just using momentum to get you in and out of the movements. Again, if we talk about squats, like, there is a little bit of a bounce. If you drop down into the bottom, your body will bounce out. There's elasticity in your muscles that will bounce you back out of it. Whereas if you stop, you actually physically have to contract the muscles to get up out of it. So you get more from each rep that you're doing. The next one, yeah. The next two are working on your range of motion and actually going past your range of motion. So the range of motion stuff, I've said this to you recently, like it's something that I'm actively trying to challenge myself on. Because I think for a long time, I was giving myself excuses like, I've got a bad shoulder, like I can't come past that. But I've actively been trying to like challenge myself a little bit more. And I will say, I'm not going to say I think, I have noticed a difference in terms of like the fullness of the muscle. So even today, I would say today is probably the best set of dumbbell bench press that I've ever done at a high weight. So it was 100 and whatever, 50 kilos, 110 pounds. I got 10 reps, but I got like the dumbbells were touching my chest. So I was like, I was right in it. So I've obviously spent the time. I dropped the weight right back, but I worked on the range of motion and I feel a lot better, a lot more confident throughout the whole movement. Working past range of motion is something if you put a bumper plate, you stand on a bumper plate and you're doing like deficit deadlifts. So you're actually going past your range of motion and you challenge yourself in a little bit further range of how you sort of manipulate it with other like bits of equipment and whatever else. So there are two other ways to improve the efficiency of the load that you're lifting and still be able to progress without adding more weight.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I've actually been focusing pretty heavily on is range of motion in my movements. I've traditionally been a pretty stiff individual, and with DDPY, you know, the Diamond Dallas Page Yoga, I do a lot of his stretching movements on every single workout. And I do it after. I don't do it before. I'll do more dynamic stretching, i.e. just warming up, essentially. Dynamic workouts, ever, you know, like...
I don't know if I have ever mentioned this. Have I ever mentioned the DC extreme stretching, the dog crap extreme stretching?
Yeah.
So that for stretching, like intro workout stretches, again, absolutely fucking brutal that you hold yourself in a stretch position, but how much more you can get from the range of motion by incorporating those things. And the way that they structure it is you actually do it in between sets. So whenever you're meant to have your rest period, you put yourself into the stretch. And the idea is it expands the film that surrounds the muscle. So it gives you more room and more development for growth. Now, I don't know how much science and bro science that is, but to me, it makes sense. But there definitely is an element of being deep in the stretch, whether it's triceps or whether it's chest or whether it's quads or whatever it is. The one for quads is absolutely brutal because you basically get yourself into the bottom of a sissy squat position and your quads like feel like they're about to rip off. But things like that, you can incorporate intro workout sets. You're not actually having to spend more time in the gym. You fill it into the gaps of the sets that you're already doing.
Well, and I'll tell you one thing that has completely changed for me with the post-workout stretches is that I don't get any like shin splints or knee pain or anything else anymore that I used to. My IT, what would happen a lot of times, and it had to do with, it's amazing how interconnected everything is, right? So my hips would be super tight, which would cause me to put more strain on my lower back. My lower back would then get tight, which would then pull on my IT bands, which then would jack up my knees, which then would cause me to get shin splints, right? And, you know, it was like just because I had crappy hips caused this whole cataclysmic downfall, you know, especially when I'm running in like Orange Theory, I'd get like these horrible shin splints and my knees would feel like they're like, you know, getting ripped off. And I'd get like, you know, like I was just having trouble with it. And it was all due to really my hip mobility. And I've really been focusing on that as part of my deadlifts. You know, as part of how I lift and how I treat, you know, kind of that whole area. So I do some crazy, you know, yoga stretches where I'm like sitting on like both my legs and they're like tucked behind my back and I'm, you know, like all these other things, and it hurts. But after I'm done with it, I've noticed that my range of motion for pretty much all my movements continue to get substantially better. And, you know, one thing that was a big misconception for me that I didn't realize was the stretch position is ideal. And I always thought, like, let's just take a pec deck, for example, right? A lot of people will keep the pec deck forward like this, not in a fully stressed position. So you're not stretching your pecs. You're not back here. Now, there's too big of a point, right, where you can probably hurt yourself. But you want to feel that stretch in your chest when you're going through and doing the pec deck. And as you're coming forward, you want to make sure you're touching, you know, your hands together, or if you can, you know, put your finger, you know, hands like this, you know, and then get as close as you possibly can to get that contraction in your chest. And then when you're coming back, go all the way back to that stretch position to where your chest is completely stretched out. You're putting that strain on there and then you have to lift on the concentric motion in a stretched position. And I was actually watching Nippard. He had a mind-blowing, by the way, a new rear delt exercise movement on the pec deck. So he was like, hey, you know, when you do the pec deck, most people, you know, go here, you know, the reverse pec deck to the reverse flies, come here and they go like this, right?
Yeah.
Well, the problem with that is that you're not putting your rear delts in a stressed position. He's like, turn sideways on the pec deck, okay? Put one shoulder, you know, put your hand over your kind of your chest in the thing, and then use the machine to be in a stressed position and go this way.
Oh, yes. So you have to go across this way. So you get the stress. So not just the ear.
He said machines, though, won't allow you to go. You'll stop here. But he's like, it doesn't matter. It's still superior
because you're in a stressed position.
So doing the rear pec deck, you know, one arm at a time in a stressed position over here, coming back this way is going to be substantially better from a rear delt perspective than not. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. So when we're doing these things, you know, range of motion, stretch positions can be a huge amplifier for muscle gaining, the progress that you make, and really, you know, progressing much faster than you typically would.
Yeah, and I actually remember, I know that I've spoken recently about, we talk about, you know, practical versus optimal. And for a big, for a long time, I was very much an advocate of like using cables to do lateral raises, but I realized it's a shit show for a lot of people to set up, which is absolutely fine. And I was like, yeah, I'll just use dumbbells. But I watched it was Jeff Nippert and Dr. Mike, and they were talking about, again, the benefit of using the cable because it puts your delt in that stress position because it's pulling from the opposite side at the bottom. So the same sort of idea where it's like, if I'm using a dumbbell, I'm only getting the range from here to here. So say from like my armpit at like 20 degrees to 90 degrees, whereas we get the cable, you actually go past it and you put that into the stretch position. So exact same idea as you're talking about, but because the cable is pulling you from the opposite, the bottom of the opposite side, you get that fully stretched position as well. So there you go. The next one is density, like workout density. And this is, again, I will give us credit. This is something we've been working on, essentially doing more work in less time or doing the same amount of work in even less time. Like we've definitely been doing that. I know that you joked about having a 10-hour deadlift session for Father's Day, but like day
to
day.
I was kind of getting to that point, by the way. I mean, it was like, sometimes I'd spend 3.5 hours in the gym.
Yeah. So being able to progress in terms of getting more stuff in, and that's whether that's managing your rest periods or managing your tempo or not being on your fucking phone on Twitter or whatever, like you can definitely get the work in. And it's something that since I've changed that, I've noticed my frequency of actually going to the gym has increased because instead of me going, right, I have to drive 20 minutes to get there, it's going to take me an hour and a half and then 20 minutes to get back, I'm calculating the last time. If I'm like, right, it's going to take me 20 minutes to get there, I can be in and out in 40 minutes and get a good workout and be back. I'm much more sold on that and actually getting it done. So I'm getting more sessions in more frequently across the week. So just being able to play about with the stuff that you get done and the time that you have to do in the gym is another way to progress as well.
Well, and so I will say, like, so the new program that you gave for me, so I did legs on Saturday, right? And then Sunday was a rest day. And when I did the legs programming, you know, you give me the flexibility to be able to switch certain things in and out, right? And I do the, since I got the Rogue ISO leg press, which is a whole nother story about how that thing got into my room. But this thing shows up. So I got the Rogue ISO leg press. It's you know, individual leg press. You can do one leg at a time, which I absolutely love because one, I'm in a fully stressed position. Like it stretches my entire leg, you know, all the way up. Cause my right leg is, my right leg is completely fully extended, you know, with a little bit of knee bend. My right one has to come all the way back. So I'm in a fully stressed position on that quad. Or, you know, if you want to do glutes and hammies, you just go a little bit higher, right? Allows you to hit glutes and hammies even heavier. I love that thing because one, whenever I'm doing leg presses, normally I have to load like 1,000 effing pounds, 1,200 pounds, 1,300 pounds in that thing. And it's just loading plates all the time. With 300 pounds on each side, it's working me out big time. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? It's much more difficult than a traditional, you know, leg press that you have out there. But with the programming you gave me, right? You know, leg press is part of that. So I switched, you know, obviously going to ISO. But what's interesting is I was in and out. So I had to wake up. So I had we had to be at Airsoft by 10. So I had to be done by working out by 9. I was in the gym at 8. And I was walking up the steps at 9 and I couldn't use my legs, you know, so it was an hour long session. And you know, what I did
20 minutes for the start to get up the stairs.
So my legs, you know, doing the whole vibration. The funny part was I got halfway up my steps and I realized I forgot my bottle, you know, my drinking bottle. And I mean, I'm very meticulous on like leaving things in my like a kid's note. Don't leave, you know, like it's gotta be immaculate. And so I had to go back downstairs again. And I just sat there. I'm just like, I just need 2 minutes. Like, I just need 2 minutes to like get the courage to go up the steps right now. But, you know, 45 minutes to an hour of a leg workout to where I'm that fatigued, which, by the way, is the same way I would feel if I was doing 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Right. So if you take away, you know, the timing aspects, and I'm on the block right now that you gave me for this, right? I'm looking at the programming. Notice the timing between this. So for one, you put tempo in there. So I'm looking at, you know, the abductor machine, which, by the way, today when I was at Orange Deer, I started walking, and, you know, just to kind of warm up on the treads, and my abductors were just toast. I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, seriously? Like, my whole groin area is just all like not happy right now. So, you know, so you start off with, and I also like the way that you did the programming, because we get rid of the things that I typically just don't like doing, you know, like the calf raises, the abductor machines, like we get those out first, right?
Yeah.
So that we're at least know we're going to do them. We can't skimmy out on those. So we do those first. And then, you know, we went to the hamstring curls with a 3-1, 2-1 tempo. And then, you know, standing calf raises. So the eccentric, concentric being different. The standing calf raises, machine Smith machine squats, which I love. I did the elevated heel Smith machine squats. I love those. Those are my favorite. So, you know, so you have like a little bit of a raised heel, which you're putting all of the weight basically distributed on your toes and your ball of your the front of your ball of your foot, and then it basically just destroys your quads. And then, you know, and then from there I did seated leg extensions, narrow stance leg press, which is what I switched to the iso leg squat. And then friggin', I'll tell you, the Bulgarian split squats after doing all of that is so stupid. Like it's the stupidest thing ever. Because by the way, I forgot to mention, on the seated leg extensions, it's 2 10-15 reps. We also run the rack. So my legs are already toast. And then we're doing Bulgarian. It worked out really well. But again, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, you know, it's one of those things where I'm already, you know, exhausted. So we can definitely condense those time frames. But the one thing I wanted to mention, this is the reason why I brought the training block up, is that in these, you have rest periods of how long I'm supposed to be resting, right? And so we look at this and we say, well, between the adductor and hamstring curls, which are going to be supersets, and then to the standing calf raise, all supersets, we're doing one big superset block of standing calf raises, hamstring curls, and adductor machines. There's zero rest between the adductors, hamstring curls, and the standing calf raises. Once I get the standing calf raises, I'm only waiting 60 seconds. So there's only a minute in between there. So if you think about it, really to do one set of three different exercises is taking me probably 3 to 3.5 minutes, mm-hmm. right? And then I'm hopping back on again. So, you know, I've already gone through three different exercises in a 3.5 period of time, total of maybe 10 to 15 minutes for that one block. And then I'm moving on to the next ones, right? So, you know, it's making sure you're efficient with your time, not playing on your phone, not spending, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And I actually ordered, and I have one of these I use all the time now. It's called the Timer. You can find it. It's called a Time Me Timer, which I think you've had one of those as well, Ben. Yeah. And it's basically just this small thing that clips onto your shirt, and you hit the button when you're done, and it has a 60-second interval. So you know when, you know, your rep is over, instead of having to have like a stopwatch or user, again, you want to stay away from your phone. So don't have those distractions. I have just basically a button I press, and then it vibrates and it, you know, goes red or green based off of when it's time. So those types of things, those little hacks can help you stay consistent while you're there to maximize efficiency. But if you think about that from a 3.5 hour to 60 minute, my time period of what I'm doing is I'm still putting much more volume on myself because I'm shortening, condensing the time frames I have to rest. Therefore, my muscles are still under duress. They haven't fully recovered yet. So the time under tension, the amount of volume, everything else continues to increase as I'm going through and doing this.
Yeah. I think it's recognizing within your sessions how much of that time you're actually working. Because yes, can I spend 3 hours in the gym? Of course. But like, am I sitting for 5 minutes in between on Twitter or sending you messages about how much I hate training legs or whatever the thing is? Like, all of those things are going to be additional time. It's like, oh yeah, but I'm in the gym for 3 hours. I'm like, but you're probably only actually working for 40 minutes, if even. So it's like understanding how we can make it as efficient as possible to progress through it. The next one is intensity. So the two that I've noted for that is speed and power, and then actually working past failure. So when I say working past failure, we talk about doing your set to failure and doing like a drop set or doing run the rack, as you said. So that is going to increase the intensity of your workouts. And again, it's another way we can progress. So for example, if I'm doing leg extensions and I'm stuck at 150 pounds, 15 reps, and I just can't get past it, if I half the weight, so I do my set of 15, I do 150 pounds, and then I take it to 75, and then I do another 10 reps. I'm increasing the intensity. I'm also increasing the total amount of volume, and therefore I am progressing. I'm putting an additional stress on the muscle within the same set.
Yep.
And the last one.
I would say the intensity aspect is something that I think a lot of people do struggle with, because you
intensity
have to be literally
tough. Intensity is tough because it's not something you can like just teach. Like, I can't tell you what intensity is. It's like you have to see it, feel it, witness it. Like, you have to be a part of it. Like, you have to have. So I was talking to Thomas's team last week, and I was doing a presentation, and I sort of broke down the three pillars, and I haven't really told you how I've done this, but I've taken the four pillars and made them three because it looks better on my diagram. But there is a caveat that we see the fourth pillar at the end. So essentially I've broken it down into mindset, lifestyle, nutrition. And basically if you get all those, you get the fourth one, which is the body. So I put this slide in, I went through everything and sort of like mapped it out, sketched it out as to like, these are the benefits of mindset, these are benefits of lifestyle, these are benefits of nutrition. And then the next slide is a picture of me on one side, you on the other side, and Thomas's face on the hack squat in Phoenix. I'm like, that's intensity. Whenever you have both me and Dave in your ear telling you to do five more reps, like, that's not something that you can teach. That's something that you just have to fucking live. Yes. And I think that that's a big piece of the puzzle that's missing from a lot of people's training.
I would say that's the thing that I absolutely miss, is not working out with another partner on a regular basis. You know, especially if we're continuously like kind of pushing each other. Like, if Dom comes and works and lifts out with me, it's cool because I have somebody to talk to. I get more distracted. It takes me a little bit longer. We're usually not doing the same sets, so we don't necessarily push each other.
Yeah.
You know, but if there's something that we're struggling with, absolutely. I'll be like, come on, let's go. And it does the same thing to me. You know, that intensity, especially if we're working out on her. Like, remember when we got to that shitty contest with leg presses?
Yeah, the one that I won.
And you did win it. Yeah. You did win it.
Yeah, I remember.
You did. No, I'm not going to even argue that.
So, Trish, if you're listening, for the sake of Dave's, and my progress, I think it'd be beneficial for us to move to Ohio, because we would be able to get more sessions in training together, and we would progress more, which would be better for everybody.
Honestly, you're basically making an investment in your life and living longer.
Exactly.
Is what this all comes down to, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And I would assume, you know, Trish wants you to live longer.
I would hope so.
And to be there much longer for Harper and for Kay and everybody, you know, like, I think that's,
I agree. Yeah. I think so. So the last one, and we'll wrap it up on this, and this actually worked out time out pretty well. I actually have made notes and come prepared, so maybe I'll do that in the future, is frequency. So whenever we talk about frequency, we talk about the amount of times that you train a muscle group across a week. So if we go from like the extremes of a bro split, where you're training chest on a Monday, back on a Tuesday, shoulders on a Wednesday, legs on a Thursday, and essentially you're hitting the muscle group once per week. If we break that down simply as to doing upper and lower, you're now training twice as much. You're training the muscle group twice as much. Or if you do full body, you're training three times as much. Or I have someone at the minute, they're training legs. Well, it's Jill, and she's training legs every single day the way that I've programmed it. So it's like push and pull, backward and forward. So the amount of times that you're actually attacking and getting the work in on the muscle group across the week and training, the frequency that you do, is another way to be able to progress without just always adding weight.
Nailed it. Well, that's some of the big, I mean, like, these small things that we're talking about are big things in the picture of saving time. Like, think about it. You know, if there was a way for you to grow faster, stronger, and better by doing some of these simple things, wouldn't you want to do that, right? And that's what we're talking about here, is different ways that we can, you know, again, if you're not progressing, let's just say you're stuck at 50 pounds, you know, changing the timing of how long those 50 pounds are from a time under tension perspective will help that. Or shortening down your time frames of how much you rest in between those will also, you know, create the same time of stimulation. So, you know, it's how do we, again, put our muscles in so much rest? And, you know, what we know from, again, the data studies as well, is that as close to failure as we can get will maximize the most amount of muscle. Now, it's been debated back and forth, but you don't need to get to failure every single time, but getting pretty darn close to failing on those muscles are the way that our muscles are stimulated the most to want to build up. And again, you think about it, you're telling your muscles, hey, I'm not strong enough for this task that I have to do. I need to build more muscle to be able to do it. So we're hacking our bodies to say, hey, not strong enough, need to get stronger. Okay, let me build some more muscle so that I can do this again next time and not have to deal with this, right? So it's really those types of things that can make a big difference in our bodies. And again, our bodies will adapt the way that we tell it to based on the instructions that we give it. If we need to be a power lifter and, you know, lift 1,000 pounds, you know, we're probably not going to look like a bodybuilder who's doing more volume and intent, you know, more volume on those short twitch fibers versus fast twitch fibers based on, again, what our body adapts to. So it's all those different kind of hacks that we can do that make a big difference. Tempo, intensity, you know, timing, time interval, time under tension, the actual amount of weights, you know, that we're doing, i.e. the volume. those things can all really impact, you know, your performance and your gains, and things that we don't typically focus on, you know, when we're at the gym. We kind of just throw these weights around and we think we're all good to go. There's a lot of science behind this that can make it even better.
Agree. And I'll say this, like, we obviously talk about, you know, stalling and plateauing out of weight and actually finding ways that we can progress beyond that. This week, be in tune with, is it your mind giving up before your body does? Like, challenge yourself to do one more. And this is, again, something I've been focused on. Like, am I just getting to a number and thinking, oh, well, I've got one more than I did last week. That's fine. Like, do you have one more rep to get? So this week, the power of one more, do you have one more rep? Challenge yourself. If yes, good, continue to progress. If no, we've just given you a list of 10 other things you can focus on that aren't just necessarily adding weight.
Yep.
So there you go.
All right. Thanks for listening. Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you again next week. Later.